I rise solely to introduce to the court my co-counsel, Robert Van Kirk, from the Washington, D.C. office of Williams & Connolly, and he has been admitted for purposes of this matter. And with the court's permission, of course, we'll make the argument on behalf of Appley.
Thank you. Welcome to the court.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Bonkowski for the appellant, National Industries Group Holding, which I will, with the court's indulgence, describe simply as NIG for purposes of the argument. If I may, with me is Therese Scheuer, who participated at great length in helping me with the briefing in this case.
Welcome.
NIG brings this appeal from the decision of the Court of Chancery denying a motion to open a default judgment. The case below arose from, I should say the decision below was focused on the refusal to relieve NIG from the form selection clause contained in the subscription agreement relating to some stocks that were sold to them in Kuwait by Carlyle. And I will again, for shortness, refer to the appellees as Carlyle. There are a couple of things I'd like to point out at the outset that I think are important. And that one of those is simply that the complaint in this case does not anywhere set forth a jurisdictional statement that would allow the matter ostensibly to proceed in the Court of Chancery. Nor does the complaint reference anywhere the phrase adequate remedy at law or 10 Delaware Code Section 342, the legislative corollary of the adequate remedy at law requirement for equity jurisdiction. Likewise, none of the pleadings that were filed for purposes of the default judgment comment on jurisdiction, nor is the word jurisdiction or the phrase remedy at law mentioned in any of those pleadings or in the transcript before then Vice Chancellor Lassiter, who was hearing it at that point in time for the Chancellor. What they do say in the complaint is that there's a form selection clause that's been breached and they want it enforced.
Well, how is it enforced if not by injunction?
Well, as this court in 1995 held in El Paso, and that's where I suppose this will all turn in some respects, an injunction standing alone does not give rise to equity jurisdiction. So while it may be a remedy that could apply, that remedy alone does not open the doors to the Court of Chancery. And then Vice Chancellor Berger made that point in her motion to dismiss decision, where she cited two reasons for dismissing the claim, one of which was an injunction doesn't get you into Chancery. That is exactly what we have here. We have a run-of-the-mill contract dispute, if you will, made interesting by the fact that it's a form selection clause, well, but with no other basis for equity alleged.
When you say run-of-the-mill contract dispute, what is the difference between this situation and specific performance?
There is none. But at the same time, specific performance, again, alone doesn't get you into the Court of Chancery. You still have to have a predicate equitable claim to get you there, and specific performance in and of itself does not satisfy that.
What case holds that? My understanding is that you can get into the Court of Chancery in one of three circumstances. The first is if you have an equitable cause of action, even if you're seeking legal relief. Or secondly, if you are seeking equitable relief, regardless of the cause of action. Or thirdly, if there's a statute that allocates jurisdiction to the court. Why aren't we in Category 2?
Well, I can say that in recent Chancery practice, I've seen several decisions, one from Vice Chancellor Lassiter, one from Vice Chancellor Glasgow.
Yeah, but we're talking about subject matter jurisdiction.
Yes, we are.
And you're saying that it isn't enough to seek an equitable remedy. You have to seek an equitable remedy and have an equitable cause of action as well?
Yes.
What case holds that?
Well, I think El Paso holds that, frankly, because in El Paso, let's take El Paso on then. In El Paso, bare anti-injunction suit was brought. Specific performance and DJ action were relief were sought, and an injunction was sought. And at the Supreme Court level, the court said that, turning to the remedy, you can get money damages somewhere else. You don't get equity relief here just because you're going to have to travel to another forum. The inconvenience of traveling to another forum is not in and of itself sufficient to establish equity jurisdiction. And therefore,
if there's an adequate remedy of law.
Yes, sir. And I think that's what El Paso says. An adequate remedy of law is can you get the harm that you would suffer, and that harm was characterized in that case in two ways. One, affirmatively, by saying it's not money and it's not time lost or time value, and merely enforcing a forum selection clause is not equitable if you can get that relief somewhere.
I think you've read El Paso in an overbroad way. El Paso involved an equitable claim for injunctive relief. I think the thrust of that opinion and others is that that alone will get you in the Court of Chancery, but it won't keep you in the Court of Chancery if the Court determines that you have an adequate remedy of law, which was that case. Your argument has to be that there's an adequate remedy of law here, or else there is subject matter jurisdiction. Wouldn't you agree?
I entirely agree with that, and if I suggested that that was not the case, I apologize. Obviously, I take El Paso broadly. I think there are two questions before the court, maybe three. One is El Paso still valid? Is El Paso undercut in any way by Ingress or by Maloof? I think the answer to that is no. And the second question is there really an adequate remedy at law here? And the short answer to that is, if you look at the pleadings in this case, below, and how this issue was framed, I apologize for turning my back to you. In the opening briefs that the NIG filed, it made the point very clear at page 19 of the opening brief below. The default judgment should be vacated for lack of subject matter jurisdiction because CIM and TC Group have an adequate remedy at law. That's at page 19. We repeated that point twice later at page 20 and at 21, in one place of which we quoted from El Paso, which says that because they could go to Texas, they had an adequate remedy at law because that court would hear that issue. In my friend's answering brief, they never respond to that. The affidavit of Mr. Majid, if I'm saying it correctly, I always call him Zach, is specific in paragraph 8, I believe, where he says the Kuwait courts will hear this issue. Carlisle never responds to that. I made this point below. They don't respond to it in their answering brief. They don't respond to it in any filing with the court until we get to this stage.
Has Mr. Majid's testimony been consistent throughout the courts of this country?
Well, let's talk about the
effectiveness of the Kuwaiti court system.
I think that the Majid affidavit in the Maersk decision in the District Court of New York is the focus, and it was raised by my friends below. And to say, is it consistent? I think the answer is, on one score, yes. That is, a forum selection clause will be considered by the courts of Kuwait. Does he take issue with the procedural rights that were afforded in a fraud claim in Kuwait? He does in Maersk. He does not here. My response to that is, as I said, Maersk was a fraud claim. The Maersk court even makes the point that decision alone does not give it reason to call into question the system of law as applied in Kuwait. It was unwilling to do so. Ironically, in the same decision, the district court judge made a point of saying he couldn't even tell if Maersk, my expert's client in that case, had advanced its fraud claim or purported to defend the affirmative claim against it by asserting the fraud claim. So I come away from that decision wondering its utility here, as I said in the briefs.
Okay, when we look at El Paso, when we look at Maloof, when we look at Ingress, what does this phrase from El Paso mean in the context of your position? The decision in El Paso arguably is, and I quote, based on the facial invalidity of the forum clause. What does that mean?
I have great respect for that question because I have repeated that question to myself. I don't know what that means. How I read that is that the clause itself does not give rise to a predicate equitable basis for jurisdiction and therefore is invalid. To me, it's a circular nullity. It doesn't add anything or detract anything that would help this court decide whether this case is unique compared to El Paso.
Is there some distinction between a forum selection clause which says in the Delaware Court of Chancery and one that says in the Delaware courts?
Well, I don't think so. Well, two reasons. One, they came to the Court of Chancery. Whether they could have gone to Superior Court, I suppose, is for another moment. But I don't think so. They still would have to have an equitable basis to be there. Or to, as Chancellor Berger, now Justice Berger, said, you can't do it by contract. That's the overarching point. You can't create it by contract.
Right, which is why the issue has got to be, does Court of Chancery have subject matter jurisdiction?
Yes, sir.
And if this were a genuine claim for injunctive relief, it would. The issue is whether it's a genuine claim in the sense that there's no adequate remedy at law. That's the issue in this case.
I don't disagree.
And you need to contend with the reasoning of the trial judge that the bargain that was reached here by the contracting parties was that that neither of them would have to be subject to the risk of a possible misapplication of Delaware law by a non-Delaware court. And the only way to enforce that bargain is either by injunctive relief or specific performance, call it what you will. It's not enough just to require the party seeking to litigate in Delaware to litigate someplace else and then to pay them with money damages, because the risks that are involved can't be reduced, if at all, to money. That, how do you respond to that?
Well, there's a few components to that, and I'm afraid I may have lost the first issues that I had in my head. But in our brief, I think we take on exactly the arguments that the Chancellor Stein advanced.
Well, so enlighten me with what you said in your brief.
I will try. Certainly, the point is, if I may, let's just stay with the notion that it was an agreement that had to be enforced. I think you've run right into El Paso with that, because it's an agreement that's outside the scope of the court's jurisdiction. But that being said.
Let's not talk about other cases. Just talk about this case.
Okay.
Why would money damages be an adequate remedy, given the nature of the risk that the parties bargained that neither side would have to endure?
Well, I feel a bit constrained, because what we're looking at here is, in my view, purely an issue of stare decisis with El Paso. But to stay away from El Paso, or try to, what you're talking about is money. You're talking about, I have to fly somewhere, I have to pay an expert, I have to do various things. That in and of itself has never been chancery. And those are some of the cases that erode the extent of a specific performance remedy as being equitable. But then
right. You
also have the fact that these parties negotiated an agreement, part of which agreement includes requirements that Kuwaiti law applies. So there has to be some notion here that Carlisle went in with eyes open to what it was doing in Kuwait, recognizing the possibility that it might be called to Kuwait.
How does that follow?
How does it follow that they might be called there?
Well, we have a forum selection clause that selects Delaware. You're telling me that a Delaware court under this agreement would have to apply Kuwaiti law?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. Because they have it. It's my friends chafe at the idea that
but,
the blue sky
but then you argue that from that, those two facts, it follows that Carlisle had to recognize that the combination of those two elements subjected it to a risk that it may have to defend at Kuwaiti. How does that follow?
Well, first, I apologize. First, I think I said that first they agreed to the invocation of Kuwait securities laws in this case. And then I said, having gone to Kuwait to make these sales, they opened the opportunity that they might be sued in Kuwait. This is a globetrotter economy, and they are a classic example of it. They can't act as if they would have to. They were called to Kuwait, and it would be a shock.
Well, isn't that the purpose of a forum selection clause, to avoid the shock of litigating in a jurisdiction where you're uncomfortable?
It certainly is, but that doesn't mean it's equitable in nature.
Who testified that Kuwait would enforce a forum selection clause selecting Delaware? Anyone?
Well, no one testified to that fact. Nor is anyone, as I read the case law, required to testify to that fact.
Well, that's interesting, because who has the burden in lifting a default judgment? Who
Certainly.
Has the burden here of showing that there was an adequate remedy at law?
NIG has that burden.
Well, how do you show that? How do you satisfy that burden in the absence of testimony that says a Kuwaiti court would honor the party's bargained for and agreed forum selection clause?
Respectfully, I don't believe that's the standard that we're required to meet. We're required to demonstrate to the court that this issue would be taken on by the Kuwait court and resolved. That is exactly the language that we recite in the brief, in both briefs, and we meet that. Mr. Majid says the court will take that on.
Well, take that on
that
meaning?
That foreign selection clause defense.
But he won't say and didn't say that they would enforce it.
If that's the case, what is the notion of comity for?
What is the notion of a contract for? If you have a provision in a contract that you have bargained for and both parties have signed off on, where is the rule of law if you can't rely on that forum selection clause?
Well,
to suggest that a court is going to handle or take jurisdiction over a contract dispute and then pick and choose the provisions of the contract they'll enforce, or some expert testifies, they'll consider it, but I don't know of any precedent that would say they would enforce it is the inference from that.
Well, Mr. Majid, after being confronted with the Maersk case, and I was not aware of that affidavit, frankly, before the hearing, and which I think is also easily distinguished, but when he got that, he made clear that these issues will be taken on by the court. And he said that. And still they did not counter that by saying, no, they won't. He offered a case that dealt with personal jurisdiction, elected domicile in Kuwait for purposes of litigation, and the Kuwait court and upheld the forum selection clause.
Well, I may be having a bad day, but I'm trying to get the nuance between they would take it on and some testimony that there is a rule of law in the Kuwaiti courts and they will enforce the provisions of a contract that are clear and unambiguous.
Well, I don't know if the simple statement of the man who's been practicing there for 17 years, maybe it was awkwardly put, maybe I should take responsibility for that, but he said they would rule on that motion as a part of their jurisdiction over the case. And I think that El Paso requires that, and that's all it requires. They don't need to say, this is a little Delaware somewhere out there in the Middle East. That's not what our burden is. And that's what the Chancellor said. We have to act as Delaware courts would and as readily as Delaware courts would. And I don't think that is at all what this court would suggest to the world in terms of how its jurisprudence will be applied.
You don't think that behind the forum selection clause is a concern by all of the parties to the contract that the rule of law would apply to any dispute between them that arises from the contract?
I do believe that's the case. But right now we're wondering about the utility of the decision in the context of equity jurisdiction. They're going to go to Kuwait, if so ordered by this court, and they're going to litigate that issue in Kuwait. That issue is not gone. They're going to go there and they're going to have their opportunity. And if the court refuses this appeal and affirms, then that opportunity has been, you know, they don't have that obligation. But nobody's denying them that opportunity. That's the point.
Okay.
Well, and what would your position be if someone wanted to transfer this Court of Chancery case to the Superior Court?
Certainly that's one of the I think that's an obvious remedy to the problem that's before us, but they didn't do that. They came to Chancery and now we're here. So I
but
think
if it was transferred to the Superior Court, would you have any reason to say that it didn't not have to be tried in a Delaware court based on the forum selection clause?
I want to be cautious. I don't think I have said that it has to be tried in Kuwait. All I'm challenging here is the fact that it was presented to the Court of Equity improperly. I think, and that's one of the oddities of this whole argument, we focus so much on Kuwait, you ignore the possibility of the district court or the state court, Superior Court, because they wanted to be in Chancery. But no, I don't think I can't, as I stand here, fathom a reason why that would not be appropriate. But having said that, I reserve the notion that there's fraud here, as pled in Kuwait, and as indicated in our briefs, and I think that's
irrelevant, isn't it, to at least in given the procedural context that we're in, which is
irrelevant.
A motion to lift a default judgment. We're not litigating the merits of the claim in Kuwait or even the claim in Delaware, except to the extent that we're litigating whether or not the forum selection clause should be enforced.
Well, my initial response was to Justice Holland, who was wondering, is there any reason that you would chafe at going to Superior Court? And if there's fraud and if there's no jurisdiction in Delaware, then I would. But talking simply in terms of jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, no.
My question is broader because, as I understood it, you were also attacking personal jurisdiction. And if the parties submitted themselves to the Delaware courts, and you seem to agree, if this had been in the Superior Court, you'd have a whole different set of arguments or maybe no arguments at all. So if we start with the premise, under the contract, they've submitted themselves to the Delaware courts, then they don't show up in Chancery and they get a default judgment, the problem for them is the standard of review on opening a judgment.
And that's not responded to in the briefs either, and we point that out. This is a motion to lift a default. And if I may segue for a moment to Justice Jacobs' question, in terms of the motion itself, the notion of personal jurisdiction is not immediately germane to subject matter. My question was, and Justice Holland took me there, so that's why I was doing the bifurcated response, if you will. But I agree that the personal jurisdiction issue remains. And I'll end with that point. Comedy, this isn't a traditional comedy case, like the Maris case, where they were dealing with a post-judgment decision that was they wanted to give preference to. This is more, how did this court handle the various parts of the puzzle? And Mr. Hassan gives his affidavit, and he said, we believed that our contract was invalid because they didn't have an agent, and as a consequence, we did not come. And the chancellor took great offense to the fact that they waited 10 months to do whatever they did. They should have been here before. He dismissed the idea entirely that there was any validity to that notion that their contract and their law allowed them that response.
At that time.
Well, I don't know about that, Your Honor. I mean, the Rule 60 says that a judgment that lacks subject matter jurisdiction is void, that it's void from the get-go. It has no effect. So I'm not sure at that time fits this.
I think the court was saying that perhaps you could have made all of these arguments had your client come into Delaware.
He certainly says that as well.
And basically moved to stay the action or whatnot.
Yes, he says
but
that.
But it didn't. It waited. It didn't show up when ordered to do it. It didn't show up given two opportunities. And finally, a year later, it does show up and tries to make the same arguments that it might have been able to make had it come in the first place.
And I would suggest respectfully that it still has that right. If it's alleging lack of jurisdiction, which is really at the heart of this, it retains that right at whatever moment it brings it. And it would be improper to say simply by delay you forfeit the right to challenge jurisdiction.
Do you want to save your last two
minutes? I did. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Robert Van Kirk with Williams & Connolly. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiffs, appellees. I thank Mr. Skaggs for the introduction, and I'm joined at council table by my colleague, David Kurtzer, Ellen Bogan. The provision that we're talking about here was included in a global private offering only to sophisticated investors. It was freely contracted by the parties. They chose consciously, purposefully, Delaware courts as the forum in which all disputes would be litigated, and they chose Delaware law precisely because of its predictability. The effort was, when you're selling to people across the world and across the country, if you're going to have litigation about these issues, they should be consolidated in one place. That's the bargain that was struck. That's how this transaction was constructed from the outset. And it proved to be a necessary clause because cases have either been filed or threatened to be filed in Kuwait, in Massachusetts, in the Netherlands, in Guernsey. And this is precisely why parties enter into these sorts of clauses. So that they know that when they start, if there's going to be litigation, it will be heard in one court system under one set of uniform laws. That's the choice that NIG made when they signed up for this contract. They're a sophisticated party. Their website, as Chancellor Schrein noted, boasts about investments across the world. They understand how this game is played. They chose to enter into the transaction. All we ask is that the court enforce that through the powers of the Chancery Court, and we think it was entirely appropriate for the court to do that. It had subject matter jurisdiction over this because there is no adequate remedy law. It had personal jurisdiction over Mr. Bonkowski's clients because they can't just say, oh, the agreement is void under Kuwaiti law and get out from under it. The case law is very clear about that.
Can I interrupt you?
Certainly, Justice Berger.
Could you expand upon there was no adequate remedy at law?
Absolutely. It may be appropriate just to address the El Paso case to begin with. They say that we're attempting to base this jurisdiction on contract. We're not. We're not basing the jurisdiction of the court on the contract. And in El Paso, the court there was dealing with a forum selection clause that attempted to mandate jurisdiction over both legal and equitable claims in the Chancery Court. So with regard to Chief Justice Steele's remark, the court was dealing with a forum clause that was invalid on its face because it's absolutely clear under Delaware law that you can't do that. You can't by agreement say all of our disputes, no matter what they are, whether they're equitable in nature or legal in nature, must be brought in the Chancery Court. Can't do that. On its face, that clause was invalid. The court properly looking at that clause said, you haven't been irreparably harmed. You have no right that can be enforced. Making you go to Texas isn't costing you anything because your clause is invalid. And that's what El Paso
can we get to this case?
And absolutely. In this case, and in all cases, in Ingress, which this court decided just 3 years ago, it adopted the Bremen standard. And Bremen says specifically, the U.S. Supreme Court case, that when you're dealing with forum selection clauses, they should be specifically enforced, precisely because that is the only remedy that gives you a meaningful form of relief. When you have contracted not to have to litigate your right to litigate in Kuwait and Massachusetts and Guernsey and the Netherlands, it isn't good enough to give you your attorney's fees back. It isn't good enough to pay you for your travel time. It isn't good enough to pay you back for your experts. You contracted for the right not to have to litigate in those forums, and that makes it irreparable. So Bremen says it should be specifically enforced. That's what this court in Ingress adopted as the standard, and it's, in fact, that's the modern case law. When you look at the Delaware Chancery Court treatise.
So let me see if I understand this. Normally, if you will, a claim in order to be in the court of equity has to be an equitable claim or it has to seek equitable relief. A contract claim generally doesn't fall into that category, although it can.
It may or may not.
I understand. A forum selection clause, as I understand you to be arguing, a forum selection clause automatically provides jurisdiction to the Court of Chancery because if you've got a forum selection clause, you have to be able to specifically enforce it. So you're in.
It doesn't automatically. It depends on the relief you're seeking, and that's why it's not based on the contract. You could decide, listen, I think I'm irreparably harmed, but these people sued me not in Delaware but in Pennsylvania. Yes, I could go to Delaware and seek an anti-suit. I'm entitled to because I've been irreparably harmed. But under these circumstances, because I trust the predictability of the Pennsylvania courts and the inconvenience is not so great, I elect only to seek damages. In that case, you may sue in the Superior Court. So it isn't automatic. But if you choose to seek injunctive relief, and if you choose to seek specific performance, absolutely the Chancery Court has automatic jurisdiction over that provision in each and every instance because the Supreme Court case law says that you're irreparably harmed. This court in Ingress said that you're irreparably harmed when it's violated. All of the arbitration clauses or arbitration cases that the Supreme Court has decided, and Chancellor Stern referred to these, Prima Paint and Southland is another, where it says, you know, you don't have to go to district court and litigate your right to arbitrate. You don't have to decide that whether the contract is void there. It is the fact that you've been denied your right to arbitration that defeats the very core purpose of the contract. And as a consequence, you're entitled to stay the district court proceedings, never show up there until the arbitration provisions are through. So, yes, all of the modern case law moves in that direction. What this court did in Ingress is fully supportive of it. It's consistent with the Bremen and all of the Supreme Court's forum selection clause cases, and it's consistent with what the Supreme Court has done in the arbitration context, is to say it is not an adequate remedy to say go litigate there first over whether you can actually be in the forum that you contracted for, because that defeats the core purpose of the agreement.
So if I understand you, the claim can be strictly money damages, okay? But it's you have a forum selection clause that says you sue in the Delaware Court of Chancery, so you can bring your money damage claim in the Court of Chancery because you start out with an anti-injunction action or proceeding to enforce your forum selection clause.
No, I don't think that's quite right. What I would say here, in this case, we did not seek money damages.
Okay,
and there would be
but,
a question about...
Let's deal with my case, okay? Yes. Let's deal with a case where you have a contract, you have a claim for money damages based upon breach of that contract, and you've got a forum selection clause in the contract that says we sue in the Court of Chancery in Delaware. Does that mean that you can go into the Court of Chancery in Delaware, seek money damages, and seek an injunction in support of your forum selection clause, and that gives you jurisdiction in the Court of Chancery?
I think the question in that case would be whether or not the additional damages damages claims predominate, whether they are swept in under the cleanup doctrine or not. But you would have to establish, first of all, Chancery Court jurisdiction, and it would have jurisdiction over the injunctive claim. If you conclude that this is essentially a damages claim and it doesn't fall within the cleanup jurisdiction of the Chancery Court, you may conclude, no, it doesn't belong here. Even though you are part of what you are seeking is an injunctive, that isn't the main thrust of your case. Your case is really about your damages claim, and we think in the exercise of our discretion or in that case.
So if the primary claim for relief is money damages, the case doesn't go into Chancery. If the primary case, the claim is for injunctive or specific performance relief, with damages being only incidental, then it does belong in the Court of Chancery.
That's correct, Justice James.
Well, let me make sure I understand that. I heard you to be saying that because specific performance is available to enforce a forum selection clause, sort of a anti-suit injunction, I think is the phrase people have been using, Chancery determines whether that clause is enforceable. Then if Chancery determines that the primary claim is one for money damages, Chancery can transfer it or give the party an option to transfer to the Superior Court, or it's otherwise dismissed.
And I think that would certainly be another way of dealing with it, and I'm not certain how the Chancery Court would deal with it at the outset, but it certainly would be appropriate for the Court to say, I do have subject matter jurisdiction over the specific performance aspects of this case, and I'm entitled to issue an injunction to enforce it. And again, all of the modern case law is consistent with the view that it is the core purpose of the contract not to have to litigate in these different fora, and that you need specific enforcement. And the Bremen says this specifically, that these clauses should be specifically enforced, that provides the Chancery Court with jurisdiction to enter these types
then
of injunctions.
Then the Chancellor then has discretion to keep the case or not after the injunction is issued. Is that your position?
That would be the position, yes, as to whether or not it was within the cleanup jurisdiction of the Chancery Court or not.
Let's look at it from a different point of view. Assuming the forum selection clause says Delaware courts, and the action is brought in Delaware in the Superior Court for damages, and then you have a second suit in Kuwait that you want to stop. Do you go to the Court of Chancery for specific performance of the forum selection clause to keep your case in the Superior Court?
You certainly could do that, Justice Holland. Yes, that would be a way of doing it, since the Superior Court's injunctive powers are limited to non-existent. So in that instance, you could bifurcate. And in this case, it's clear we didn't ask for damages. We said specifically in this case we were only seeking specific performance, declaratory relief, injunctive relief, nothing else.
But we have to look at it from the broader perspective. First, specific performance of a forum selection clause, and second, the proper jurisdiction within a Delaware court if the forum selection clause says Delaware courts.
Understood. Yes, and in that context, that would be an appropriate way of dealing with the case. Under these facts, I think there's no question that the court had subject matter jurisdiction to issue this injunction to protect the purpose of the contract and ensure that we didn't have to litigate in multiple fora our right to be in Delaware, that we could always litigate that issue here.
Okay, let me make sure I understand. If the forum selection clause doesn't say we select the Delaware courts, but it says we agree to litigate in the Delaware Court of Chancery, which is a court of limited jurisdiction, that forum selection clause is still enforceable, specifically enforceable, and gets you into the Court of Chancery even if the underlying claim is entirely legal. Is that it?
No, I think that's what El Paso holds. El Paso holds that if you attempt to dictate Chancery Court jurisdiction and Chancery Court jurisdiction alone by contract, that clause is facially invalid. Can't be done. It would be a little bit like saying we choose federal court for resolution of all of our disputes. You can't do that. The federal courts are courts of limited jurisdiction, too. And that clause would also be facially invalid, be struck on its face. And that's struck on its face. And that's what the court in El Paso did.
Okay,
if you
but
do
this,
that,
this clause didn't say Chancery. It said Delaware courts.
Correct. Our clause did not say Chancery Court. It said in the courts of Delaware. If we had elected a damages remedy, and that's why we're not trying to establish jurisdiction by contract. We could have said, you know, we're satisfied with the damages remedy, and we're going to proceed to enforce our contractual rights only in the Superior Court. So that would have been appropriate because this clause left open whichever court had appropriate power to address the relief that we sought. Jurisdiction is premised not on the contract. It's premised on the relief that we sought. Seeking specific performance, declaratory relief, injunctive relief is quintessential equitable relief that the Chancery Court had jurisdiction over it. It would be a little bit like if you had a contract for a purchase of a piece of art and you said, you know, you're not giving me the piece of art that I contracted for. I'm going to go to Chancery and I want specific performance of that contract right. Chancery would have jurisdiction to insist that the painting be turned over, and this case is no different. In fact, the suggestion that Ingress is different because it had other claims is also irrelevant because all of those other claims were likewise premised on the contract and were likewise equitable claims for equitable relief. So the fact that you have five versus one, I think, is not a basis for distinction.
Your argument really has two parts. The first part is if the clause is general, Delaware courts, courts of Delaware, you can always go to the Court of Chancery to enforce that right.
Absolutely.
Then your secondary argument is having enforced that right in the Court of Chancery, you are in the correct Delaware court by being in the Court of Chancery because of the nature of your claims.
Correct. That's absolutely right, Justice Hall.
So to take your art analogy, the rays, so to speak, in this contractual provision is the right to litigate in Delaware.
It is.
Not the money damages. It's a separate contractual right to litigate in Delaware.
Absolutely. And I think that's what all of the cases on the forum selection clause, the entire modern trend, and I think the Wolf and Pittenger treatise that Chancellor Strine cited, says that the modern case law all establishes that forum selection clause should be specifically enforced by injunction precisely because you are denied the right you contracted for. That's also consistent with all of the Supreme Court case law on this and Supreme Court case law on arbitration provisions. Same principle. You contracted for the right to arbitrate. You're being denied the right to arbitrate. You therefore can have the district court proceedings essentially stopped. And that's all we're seeking here is that the Kuwaiti proceedings stop and that we proceed in Delaware with whatever claims they have remaining. With regard, just briefly, on the issue of whether it's – I think this is not relevant because our primary position is when you have a forum selection clause, you get to specifically enforce it and there is no adequate remedy at law, carte blanche per se in every instance. In this instance, if you were to look at the Kuwaiti proceedings, I mean, it is interesting. I think the Chief Justice – Steele, you picked up on this. The affidavit simply says, sure, you can throw this in Kuwait, and you can see if the Kuwaiti courts will be, you know, will rule on it. Well, it isn't enough to say that they will consider your forum selection clause. There isn't any suggestion that they have ever recognized a forum selection clause and enforced it. There's no suggestion about what the standards would be for enforcing it. So it's simply not enough to say.
In other words, if there were solid proof that the Kuwaiti courts would consider and, in an appropriate case, enforce a forum selection clause, at least there would be a factual basis for an argument that there's an adequate remedy at law.
there's at least an argument. As I say, we have our legal position is it still wouldn't be good enough, but yes, you'd at least have a factual basis. Here, there isn't even a factual basis.
So there's no argument.
No argument whatsoever. And in addition, in fact, their own expert testified in the Southern District of New York that he didn't advance a forum selection clause in one of his cases in Kuwait because the courts wouldn't recognize it. Now, he came back in his supplemental declaration and said, oh, you know, didn't mean that literally. What I meant is if you're a Kuwaiti defendant, they wouldn't enforce it. And this is different because it's a Kuwaiti plaintiff and a foreign defendant. But he also says in the same breath, Carlisle would be subject to jurisdiction in Kuwait, which under his logic would mean that the forum selection clause wouldn't be enforced. And perhaps more importantly, what he said, what their expert said in the Southern District of New York, was that the Kuwaiti legal system doesn't provide fundamental fairness, doesn't provide due process protection. So it's passing strange to have the assertion that it's an adequate remedy at law to go to a forum where their own expert has taken the position that there are no procedural protections available for the parties.
Help me understand your argument under Bremen and the trend of cases. Let's assume instead of Kuwait, we're talking about New York. And we know that New York will enforce foreign selection clauses.
Absolutely.
Is there a basis to basically deny relief, or can the chancellor, must he deny relief, or can he grant relief in his discretion anyway?
In that instance, they should still enforce the clause because, again, the right that you've contracted for is the right not to have to go to New York, not to have to go to Texas, not to go to California, and the burdens may be lessened by the fact that the distance is less, and the predictability may be greater because these are systems of government and laws that we're familiar with, but it doesn't change the fundamental fact that I contracted, or in this case, Carlisle contracted, not to have to go to each of these places, but to consolidate litigation here in Delaware. So whether or not it would be enforced or not doesn't affect the irreparable harm. It may mean that the party with the contract right may elect to defend in New York rather than seek an injunction.
So
that may happen.
Just so I'm clear, Your position is it's not an adequate remedy at law to say someone could get a fair hearing in New York because you contracted to have your case heard in Delaware.
Correct.
On the other hand, you seem to say if you're in court in New York, it's your choice. You can either raise the forum selection clause or let it go, but that's a decision for you to make.
Correct.
But if you insist on enforcing your rights, you're entitled to specific performance.
Absolutely. And that's what happened in Ingress, is that it was a California court, and the court said in that case, we're going to enjoin the parties from proceeding in California, notwithstanding the fact that the California has a similar set of laws.
Well, basically, a party to a forum selection clause has the right, but not an obligation, to seek to enforce.
Correct.
The foreign selection clause.
The plaintiff is in charge of deciding which remedies it will seek. It's suffered irreparable harm, can seek an injunction, also has suffered damages, can pursue its damages that way, can also simply defend. Choose neither to seek damages nor to seek injunctive relief, but simply defend on the ground that this is the wrong forum. So you can choose to elect your remedies, but one of the remedies in every case in which there is a forum selection clause, one of the available remedies is an injunction against the individuals from proceeding in the wrong jurisdiction because that's what you contracted for. A word about personal jurisdiction, which comes up a lot, and the focus here for NIG is really about the fact that this is allegedly void under Kuwaiti law. There are all kinds of problems with this argument. One, simply as a matter of law, the case law is crystal clear, both in the Supreme Court, in Bremen and Schur, and this court in Ashall, that you can't just say, wave a wand over the contract and say it's void and therefore I get out from under it. I'm sorry, Justice Jacobs.
I think what you're alluding to is the body of law that says that if you're going to void or argue that a forum selection clause is void, then you have to focus on the forum selection clause, not the larger contract of which it's a component.
Precisely, yes. That's your obligation. In this case, they've said, well, we think that under Kuwaiti law, this contract is void ab initio. Therefore, poof, the contract provision on forum selection also goes up in smoke, and therefore we're out from under it. And the case law is very clear that you need to instead say the forum selection clause itself was procured by fraud, the forum selection clause itself is void, and they haven't come close to that. So all the argument about what Kuwaiti law holds is entirely wrong.
So that since they haven't done that, the forum selection clause is unassailable itself.
Right.
And the forum selection clause provides that the parties consent to personal jurisdiction, right. And that's the end of the case.
It is the end of the case. Yeah. And even if you were to go down, I mean, there are all kinds of problems with their arguments. If you do address Kuwaiti law, we don't know that Kuwait is a state for purposes of the carve-out, or whether its provisions are blue sky laws. But what's very clear is this is a very limited carve-out. The provision, the choice of law clause, says that Delaware law applies to all aspects of this contract, governance, construction, and enforcement, except as affected by the blue sky or state securities laws of the state in which it's sold. Affected by. It doesn't say except that these state laws apply. It says affected by. And it's a boilerplate provision that applies to the anti-waiver provisions of all the state blue sky laws. They say you can't waive your rights under our state securities laws. Delaware has such a provision in its blue skies, that's what it's applying to. So you can't waive your rights. All that gets them to do is assert their Kuwaiti law claims in Delaware. It doesn't mean that the forum selection clause is valid. It just means that if those claims are preserved, they can be asserted.
But those are arguments that would go to the merits of the claim if the claim were being litigated in Delaware. But all that's being litigated in this proceeding is whether or not a default judgment should be lifted. And therefore, those merits arguments are not cognizable.
Yes, and it would only be cognizable if it was relevant for purposes of assessing whether whether or not the forum clause was valid. So if they were right that you could void a forum selection clause by voiding the agreement, that's when these issues about what Kuwaiti law says become relevant. But because you can't do that, you can't just attack the agreement, you have to attack the clause itself, none of the Kuwaiti law issues are at all relevant to the ultimate resolution of the case. Two words briefly on comity and on statute of limitations. Three reasons why comity doesn't come into play. One, it's very clear under the case law in the E.J. Gallo case in the Ninth Circuit that we cited holds this, that the injunction is not against the Kuwaiti courts. The injunction is against these individuals. It's against NIG for violating its contract obligations. So it isn't an affront to the Kuwaiti courts. Secondly, the case law also holds that when you're enforcing a forum selection clause, so there are a couple different kinds of anti-suits. Some of the cases deal with anti-suits for purposes of just saying you're being vexatious, there are duplicative proceedings, we don't like that, we're going to anti-suit you. In that context, comity does play a role. But when you're enforcing a contract right, it's not an issue of comity. It's an issue of enforcing the contract. And finally, here in the Rule 60 context, an argument about a discretionary right that the court may have to consider comity is the wrong time for that argument to be raised. If it was going to be raised, it should have been raised earlier. Mr. Bonkowski didn't address the statute of limitations arguments. Chancellor Strine dealt with that fully in his very careful and thorough opinion. And in that instance, it's very clear under the case law that you can't violate your contractual rights and then use your own violation as an excuse for getting out from under your contractual obligations. And there's a bevy of case law that we cited in our briefs below, that we referenced in our brief before this court, and that Chancellor Strine cited at footnote 96 of his opinion. And if there are no further questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. Very briefly, three remarks. This is a Rule 55 motion to open a default judgment. All the inferences are in my client's favor. My client has offered proof that a Kuwait court would hear and resolve a forum selection clause defense. Carlisle doesn't counter that. They attack it through the Marist case, but they don't counter it. They had numerous opportunities to do so. That inference supports my expert and should suggest that the Rule 55 motion had been granted. Minimally, the Chancellor should have said, we can take more evidence about this because this is a quandary. To suggest that this is not going to be a ruling against the Kuwait courts, I think may not be quite accurate. If the point here is that because of the Maersk affidavit involving a fraud case in a post-judgment context, this court concludes that Kuwait does not represent a legitimate remedy at law, that's at the Kuwait system. But the court below did not engage the opportunity, as Vice Chancellor Parsons did in the Vichy case, to have a hearing on the law. That was in a summary judgment context, of course. but the issue is the same. I come back constantly to the fact that this is a chancery dispute, the jurisdiction of which is at least debatable, if not disposed of, by El Paso. Mr. Van Kirk referenced the cleanup doctrine, but whenever he discusses Ingress in the briefs and today, he never mentions the cleanup doctrine in that context, in which five counts were traditional enforce a contractual obligation outside of a forum selection clause context, i.e. classic chancery, and one count was for specific performance of a forum selection clause. Ingress is different. Maloof doesn't even get that far. Maloof simply says we have a contract, and it's broad or it's narrow or characterize it how you like, but that allows us to create jurisdiction by contract, the nature of the contract, the size of the contract, which is just a slippery slope. You might as well do away with 342 of Article 10 because they've now done it. They've now found a way to create jurisdiction by contract.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. Recess.